Well, once again, we all gather around the oak panel study here known as the Dave Cave for...
Theater of the Mind. I love it.
Real life, Gina Pastore
and David James.
It's winter's night. Yeah. How are you, Gina?
Are you ready?
The holidays are over. We're diving into 2016.
Yeah, I'm glad they're... I always enjoy the holidays, but I'm always glad when they're over, too, so...
I get depressed when I'm putting away stuff, though.
Do you?
Seriously, I end up in a funk for a month after I'm putting Christmas away. It's like, really?
Well, I'm still coming off a high from our last interviews with Stephen Wright. We were in the world of Major League Baseball, and now we're going to delve into another world, a totally different world of the world of prison.
Yeah, we know what prison is. People have been convicted of things go, and boy, you don't want to show up there. There's no good out of prison, right? I mean, people are being rehabilitated, quote unquote.
Are they?
But are they?
Can people change is the real question. And so tonight we have an expert on all of this. We have Dr. Mark Baker joining us again, one of our regular favorites here on Real Life. And Dr. Baker, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Always good to be with you guys.
Good to see you, Dr. Mark. LevineCounseling.org, by the way. We want to make sure people have issues or whatever they want to have addressed in counseling. LevineCounseling.org. LAVIE counseling.org.
Yes. And Dr. Baker was telling us, go ahead and tell our listeners what you're working on.
Well, I began praying about what my next book should be, and I actually asked a good friend of mine who's a pastor in Atlanta to pray for me, and so he did, and things happen. You got to be careful what you pray for.
Yeah.
And I decided that it was really on my heart to write a book on change, and particularly for men. I've been working with men for decades now. I've been involved in men's groups and the leadership of men's groups in my church. And I was asking the question, can men change? Because we've all heard this, boys will be boys.
Right.
Mothers tell the daughters, don't marry a guy thinking he'll ever change because, they won't. Or people brothers say to each other, I said this to my brother, don't bring it up to dad. He can't change. We say this.
Yes.
And so it really was on my heart to write a book about change and ask a question, can men change? And so as I was researching this, I came across this documentary called The Farm. It was nominated for an Academy Award, and it's a documentary about the Louisiana State Penitentiary where men have changed. And the documentary was so amazing that I felt, I've got to find out if this is true. These guys were hardened criminals. This is the largest maximum security prison in our country, Louisiana State Penitentiary. These guys only go there if they've murdered someone, raped someone, or committed armed robbery with a gun. And so they're sentenced there for life. 90% of these guys will die there because they have done such bad, bad things. And what happened is in 1995, a guy named Burl Kane was hired as the warden, and the guy's a Christian, and he went into the prison believing, I don't think men should be just punished in prison. I think they should be given a chance to change. And so he started implementing programs, and these guys have changed.
Wow.
So I went on this email campaign, and I finally cornered one of the wardens and went back and forth several times. She didn't want me to come out. I wanted to come out. I felt I needed to come out there. I mean, God told me I should go, so she was going to lose this argument, right? And eventually she gave in and let me come out to the prison, and now I've been there several times and had many conversations with these guys. And I mean to tell you, I have witnessed with my own eyes that men can change because I've seen it.
How many prisoners are in this?
There are...
How many men are we talking about?
Over 6,000.
Oh, my gosh.
There's 6,200 men there.
Oh, my gosh.
It's the largest. And here's the thing.
And they're all hardcore, by the way.
These are hardcore. 90% will die there because they've done such bad, bad things.
Wow.
And here's the thing. This particular prison, Angola, it's in Angola, Louisiana, was once the bloodiest and most brutal prison in the country, and it was known for it.
Ugh.
And you've seen movies based on this prison. You just didn't know it. Songs have been written about it. Stories are widely known in the South that this was the roughest and hardest place for anybody to go. Back in the 70s, if a criminal was convicted and sent to Angola, he would break down and cry because he knew what was going to happen to him once he got there.
Wow.
They had up to 40 murders a year, and prisoners were beaten by other prisoners literally to death on a regular basis.
How long were the effects of what he was implementing there?
It started pretty quickly. He came in 95, and by 99, things had already started shifting because he started making changes pretty quickly. And actually, before he got there, things started to change because it was just so intolerable. It was so brutal. It was so awful that it just started to change on its own. And God sent Burl Cain there just right at the right time where they were ready for it. Wow. Things were so bad there. They needed different leadership. They needed godly leadership. They just didn't know it.
Just out of curiosity, do you know where he was before Angola?
He was at another prison in Louisiana. Dixon is the name of a different prison where he was at that time.
Okay.
But before that, he was a school teacher.
Oh.
He was really trained to be a school teacher, and he taught, I think, for 1 year, and the kids were so unruly. And he believed there was no possibility for him doing any good there that he quit and he went into prison.
How about that?
Management, yeah.
Wow.
And you did say he's a man of faith.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The man's a
Christian. So what did he do?
Well, it was known as the bloodiest prison in America earlier in the century. And when he went there, like I said, they were ready for change because things were so awful. And they'd already begun. The warden before him tried to implement more humanitarian ways of dealing with men. Because, see, in our prison system in the country, it is awful. Most people are sent to prison because we give up on them. And we don't care anymore. Like, have you guys ever heard anything about Angola? You haven't heard anything, have you?
No, I haven't.
I hadn't either. I heard nothing about this because we don't talk about it. Once we send people to prison, they're out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. And we don't care what goes on there. Well, that worked in Warden Cain's favor, which means he could do whatever he wanted mm-hmm. because people don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's prison.
That's right. So he went in, and the first thing he did is he brought in a Bible class from his church. He said, these guys need to learn about morality because mm-hmm. they're animals. Mm-hmm. And so he brought in a guy to teach a class that was going on in his church because the way he looked at it is these men need to be morally rehabilitated. And Christianity has a system for teaching morality. He says atheists can be moral, but they don't have any system for teaching it. Mm-hmm. We teach morality every Sunday morning in our Sunday school classes, right? That's what we teach.
Right.
So he brought in a Bible class. That went over well. So then he approached the New Orleans Baptist Seminary and got them to open up a branch of their seminary inside the prison.
Wow.
And it took some conversation.
I thought you'd say, that's not easily done.
No, it took some conversation. But what he did is he convinced the president of the seminary that this would be a mission outreach for them. Mm-hmm. They have chapels inside the prison, so they have churches. I mean, like eight guys, you know, go to this one guy's church. And so he said, listen, your mission is to train and equip ministers. We've got ministers holding services inside our prison. You need to come and train them. And the seminary president said, I think you're right. It doesn't cost the state of Louisiana anything mm-hmm. because the seminary is doing it as an outreach, you know, of their Christian mission.
Yeah, right.
The Christian mission.
Right.
Yep. So they now have a official accredited seminary inside the prison,
wow.
and you can get a bachelor's degree in Christian ministry
in Angola.
Inside Angola. Aww. Today, as of today, there are 200 college educated graduates of that program who are all over the prison in
Angola.
Oh
my gosh.
So, how did the state of Louisiana stay out of this? Because you got the church thing happening, you got Jesus being proclaimed. I mean, did they see the results and said, we can't argue with this? How did that work?
It took them a while to figure out what was going on because, of course, they didn't care.
They didn't care, right?
And so, this gave him license to really do what he believed was right.
Mm-hmm.
His belief was that all men have an opportunity to not only come to Jesus Christ, but to be changed, to be transformed by the renewing of their minds. And we can offer them a chance to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, he, with that belief going, he went into the prison, and then these things came about. You know, he'll tell you it wasn't him, it was God. He would say, I just opened the gates and God came in, but he's a really wise man. I'll tell you this because I know the man. When I was there, last time I was there, 50 wardens from other prisons all over the country had convened there to try to figure out...
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear you say that.
What's going on.
Good.
Because the crime rate there is zero.
Wow.
In the major part of the prison.
Right.
Now, really, really bad people still exist.
Yeah,
I'm not saying all 6,000 of these guys have been transformed, because you and I both know that
sure.
many people here, and they don't receive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there still is a fairly large number of guys who don't hear it, don't care, don't want to care.
Okay.
Now, he calls them predators. I would call them sociopaths or psychopaths.
Right.
But they're people who reject. You know, they reject the community, they reject the gospel, they reject goodness. And so he has to keep them separate from the general population.
So he's actually set a separate part for them from the general population of the prison.
Correct. Earlier when we were talking, correct, you made a point that I had never heard before, because I would assume that most of those men are sociopathic, and you said no, very little.
No, my experience actually is that that's not the case. That's what we all think. I mean, mm-hmm, if you've murdered someone, I mean, you've got to have something twisted in your brain, right, so we need to lock you away, and somebody needs to lose that key, right? That's how most people think. Well, what I've come to find is that that's not true of most of the guys, mm-hmm, especially in long-term prison environments where they're there long enough to be rehabilitated. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem we have in our prison systems is people turn over so quickly, there's no chance to really work with them.
Right.
See, in Angola, he's got them there for life. So in most prisons, if you stab somebody with a knife, you go to solitary confinement for 2 weeks because that's your punishment for stabbing someone. You stab someone with a knife in Angola, you go to solitary confinement for 5 years.
Ooh.
So the word gets out quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, you really think twice about how you want to conduct yourself in this prison.
Yeah.
We do not tolerate violence here. What we are is about rehabilitation. We're about change. We're about giving men an opportunity to make good on their lives. And do you want that or not? He gives every man an opportunity for that.
Wow.
And with these 200 educated Christian ministers there in the prison, Warden Cain doesn't have to do anything. They're doing all the work. They're the ones who were teaching about morality, teaching about change, giving every man an opportunity for transformation.
He's bearing so much fruit.
Yeah, well, that. He's a brilliant businessman.
Brilliant.
Yes. Because he gives other people the opportunity to do what they need to do, and he sits back and goes, hey.
Brilliant.
They're doing it. God's doing it. He set boundaries up, big-time boundaries in this prison.
Big time. Yeah, he believes in love, and he believes in justice both, and he's a conservative man. I mean, he's a Baptist in the South.
Yeah.
Actually, he says the religion there, the most popular religion there, he calls Baptocostal.
He's right. I've lived back there.
Yeah, me too. Yes. That's a very, very appropriate title.
That's very true.
So that's the title of the religion they have there. But, I mean, I went to one of the sermons there by a guy named Jarrell Hardy, who's one of their own educated pastors there in the prison, brought me to tears because it's so authentic.
Wow.
And he preached on Barabbas and Jesus in that passage. You know,
goodness, yes.
Who else could preach on that passage other than a guy who'd served 20 years in a maximum security prison?
Yeah.
And how God can use a man on death row for his plan of salvation. And he's doing it right there in that prison.
Hey, we're going to go to a quick break. I know you've talked, spoken to some of these prisoners who were joking off mic. Oh, what, they let you in a room with someone that murdered five people and they had cameras rolling, see you later. And you said, yeah, Dave, except they had no cameras.
Right.
Do you have a couple of stories? Be thinking about that. And then how we parlay that into our lives as men and people in our lives who we say, oh, they can't change. We're just going to be who we are. Can we talk about that next?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, we'll be right back. It's Real Life, Gina Pastore and David James.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around a bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison. And time keeps dragging on.
Back on the train. Back on the chain gang.
Fascinating discussion night. Real Life, Gina Pastore and David James. Our guest is Dr. Mark Baker, Levie Counseling, LIVIE, leviecounseling.org. You can also reach out, by the way, on the KKLA helpline at 800-801-5242. It's 800-801-5242. And we're talking about how, you know, people in Angola and Louisiana State Penitentiary, hardcore criminals,
came in and offered them change.
Yes. You have a story of one of these hardcore criminals. It was that way, but now they've been rehabilitated, serving their crime, never going to get out, but they're making a difference right there in the prison.
I'll tell you one about a guy they call Carolina. That's the nickname they call him because he was from rural South Carolina. And the warden, he did this to me several times. He said, listen, you need to meet this guy. And his eyes would light up, and I would think, okay, I don't know what that means, but I guess I should. And so he takes me into a little room, just a little bit bigger than this, and he says, okay, this is Carolina. I'll come back in a little while. And then he leaves. And he leaves me in this room. Here I am in the bowels of this maximum security prison. I have no idea if anybody could hear me if I yelled.
Oh, no.
And there's this really stocky guy with kind of scarred complexion who's sitting there across the table from me as I'm trying to talk to this guy who I found out later had murdered people with his own two hands.
Oh, wow.
More than one. And was serving life there in prison. And when I first started talking with Carolina, he didn't say anything. He just stared at me. And I mean, he wasn't talking, but we were communicating. I mean, you could feel the heat, you know, rising off this guy's kind of stocky frame. And then when he begins to speak, he just kind of fills the room with his personality. This guy was unbelievably intense. And he tells me his story. And he said that he grew up with a very rough and violent life and childhood and a lot of child abuse and alcoholism and all the terrible stuff you can imagine. And he was violent his entire life, and he got into selling drugs, and he became what he described as the most feared man around because that's who his father was. That's what he became. Mm-hmm. Eventually got put away for the last time for murdering a guy with an AK-47, and you get life for that. And so where he was in Angola, and he'd heard that these Christians were going to come in and do a Kairos event, which is a Christian ministry to prisoners. Mm-hmm. So the Kairos people coming in, and the people from the outside are called free people. And he said, I hear free people have pretty good food, so I was going to go for that. And he had this whole plan that he was going to eat the food, then he was going to turn a table over and punch somebody in the mouth, knowing that they would then take him out, and that would be his exit from the event. Mm-hmm. So he said, just as I was finishing my chocolate chip cookie, I couldn't see and I couldn't hear anything.
Wow.
He said, I have no idea what happened other than I went deaf and dumb. And he was so struck by that moment because the next thing that happened was, he said, I no longer had any hatred or indifference in my heart.
Wow.
And the only two feelings I'd ever known in my life were hatred and indifference. I either hated you or I didn't care. And if I hated you, I would hurt you. And if I didn't care, I would manipulate situations to have other people hurt you for my own entertainment.
Wow.
He told me this. And here I am sitting in the room alone with this guy. Right?
And no cameras.
And no cameras.
He has no reason to make
no
this up.
No guards.
Either. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, I was pretty anxious. In that moment, he felt what he later came to understand was love. But he didn't know it because he'd never known love. He didn't like Christians. He didn't respect them. He used to prey on them in prison. And so he had no interest in what people were saying to him. He didn't know who God was. He didn't know what love was. He just knew that it was the hatred and indifference were snatched out of his heart in that moment. And then eventually other guys in the prison gathered around him and took him under their wing and helped him understand what was happening. The guy eventually became a Christian and today is a missionary to other prisons because he is so convinced that this is the way to live, that you can live with respect and kindness and self-control. And he went on to tell me about how he went to the next prison or a prison that he went to. He was witnessing to a guy, and the guy, he says, I always pick the most violent man and come up and witness to him because I know nobody else is witnessing to that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He said, that's my calling, is to be there. This is my world. These are my people. And my calling is to witness to the most violent guy in the prison because he once was. And so he goes up to this guy and he's witnessing to him. The guy didn't want to talk to him. So the guy did what most of these guys do. He punched him in the mouth. And so Carolina stood up and said, it's okay, brother. I love you. So the guy beat him all the way down to the floor. And they hauled him off to solitary confinement. This is in a different prison where he was serving as a missionary. When they let the guy out of solitary confinement, Carolina started putting food on the guy's bunk. And he did this for a couple of weeks until the guy came over to him and said, well, are you putting this food on my bunk? And Carolina said, yeah, and I'm sick of it. I want to give you what you want. I don't want to give you what I want you to have. So you tell me what you want, and I'm going to go get it for you. He did this for 3 months. And the guy knew, even though this guy was a hardened criminal, he knew he wasn't doing this out of passivity. He was doing it out of surrender to God. And that got communicated to this guy. The guy eventually said, look, I need you to stop giving me food. And he burst into tears. And then Carolina witnessed to him. And then he became a Christian.
Oh, my gosh.
These are the kinds of powerful stories that come not through people who are religious, this comes through people who are living it in such a way that other people can smell it. Mm. It's that authentic. The change is so complete that to this day, Carolina will not fight you. This, even though he beat Carolina to a pulp, Carolina overcame him with love. He loved that man into surrender to God.
Parlay that into, that's amazing. Parlay that into our world now, as far as people in our life, maybe we say we can't change.
Right. There's a couple of things. One and the most obvious thing is spirituality changes people. When you, we've now are researching this. I mean, psychology is a little bit late, so I apologize for that. But we're actually researching what works in religion. And we know that a personal relationship with a transcendent and loving God transforms people. There's all kinds of research to suggest adolescents who have and report a personal relationship with a loving and a transcendent God do not get involved in drugs. They're less involved in risky sex behavior. They are less depressed. They're more connected. They do better in school, and they live longer. We've got all kinds of measures to show this is real. I mean, you and I know it's real because we experience it in our lives. Mm-hmm. But psychologists, these are not Christians who are studying this, know that if you have a personal relationship with a loving and transcendent God, that's the power to literally change your behavior and change your life. So that's number one.
Wow. Uh-huh.
We now know that. And two, well, we now know punishment doesn't change people. Respect changes people. Mm. We all have this idea that we need to punish people into obedience or punish ourselves into losing weight or punishing ourselves into, you know, keeping our promises. That doesn't change people. But what does change people is vulnerably opening ourselves up to God and others in a respectful way. And that changes people. It makes me want to be a better person, not have to be a better person.
There you go. Not behavior modification.
Exactly.
Right.
Control works, but only as long as there's a punishment there present. Take that away and control doesn't work anymore. What does work is authority. And authority is inspiring someone to want to be different, not making them want to be different. And that comes through respect. And, of course, that's the authority that we read about in the Bible. You know, God doesn't make us love him. You know, he gives us an opportunity out of respect for our decision. He says, you can choose me, you cannot choose me. He respectfully gives us an opportunity to be inspired to want to follow. And that's what Warden Cain gets. Mm-hmm. It's how to lead with authority, which is inspires other people rather than tries to control them.
This needs to be a movie.
Yeah,
you know
totally.
That?
Yeah, well, it's been a documentary. I've saw it.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's going to be a book.
It needs to be a motion picture, too.
Dr. Mark's writing about that, but certainly.
That's coming.
People want to learn more about what the warden's doing.
I recommend that you see what I saw, which is a documentary called The Farm. It's called The Farm. You can Google it. You can see it on YouTube. There are people who've put it up on YouTube.
All right, LaVie Counseling, thank you, Dr. Mark, for joining
us
tonight.
Also, Dr. Baker wrote, Jesus, the greatest therapist who ever lived.
Yep, get that as well, and we'll see you again next week, Dr. Mark. Thank you. LaVieCounseling.org, 800-801-5242 is the KKLA helpline. Gina, until next week.
See you next week, Dave.
See you on the radio, everybody. Good night.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.